Welcome back. My guest is Kenny Berry, former All-Star and minor league coach, manager, etc. We've been talking about different coaching philosophies and things that he had picked up as a player and some of the things he implemented as a coach. But one of the things we wanted to get into was the wife's role. And a coach's wife, because I don't think there's a lot of people out there that even think about a coach's wife. You know, they just, all you do, especially when you're talking about the major college coaches in basketball or the major league coaches in baseball, what have you, and nobody ever considers the wife, but they do quite a bit of sacrificing in order for their husband to be successful, trying to keep their husband sane in some cases. But, you know, you hear a lot about head coaches. You hardly ever hear about that person that's behind them, that wife or husband, if it happens to be a female coach. And I was interested, Kenny, in maybe the experience that you had with Alita. I know when you were managing and coaching, you'd be gone for a long period of time. And just your thoughts on what it takes for that to work in a marriage.
Well, when we started out, I was very lucky. When we started dating, I met her at a basketball game out at Washburn Earl, my old high school. And a friend of mine's wife introduced us. And, you know, before I left for spring training, I asked her if I could take her out to get something to eat. And she said, no, you can't. Your divorce isn't final yet. So she said, but you can bring a pizza over and I'll be glad to, you know, help you eat it. So I brought a pizza over, and I had never talked to my first wife very much. You know, we're sometimes not very good communicators, as you said earlier. And Alita and I talk. I mean, she can talk with the best of them, and it's good quality conversation. Mm-hmm. So I'm off in spring training, and one night I call, and I was searching, and I'd gone through a little bit of a drinking problem, and I'd gone through two, I've been released twice, going through a divorce. So I had, you know, a few things going on. Mm-hmm. And anyway, that night we got to talking, and she brought me to Christ right there on the phone. So
wow,
it was interesting. A year later, we got married, and she said, hey, when you go back into baseball, this is 5 years later, because I did a little real estate. I tried to sell this and I tried to sell that, you know, like mm-hmm. typical ball players, athletes do. They get into insurance or yep. selling cars or whatever.
Yep.
And I tried that. And then I, deep down, I really, really wanted to be in baseball. Mm-hmm. And so I told her I wanted to. So I tried to get a job. So I sent out my resume to maybe 8 or 10 people, 8 or 10 teams. And turns out that nobody was interested. I had a good friend of mine that I played with, Jerry McNurtney. And he, I talked with him. And so he talked with his boss with the Yankees. And the Yankees ended up hiring me, and that was the only team I didn't want to be with. But, you know, as the Lord works things out without your needing any assistance on it, he did it on his own, and he put me with the Yankees. And so that's where I started out, and it worked out very well. But she said, well, what are we going to do if I don't like baseball? And I said, well, we had a little girl at the time. She would have been three, and I said, well, I'll quit, I'll get out if you don't like it. Well, the nice part about it was she loves to travel, and the kids, we changed schools with the kids sometimes. Boomer, when he was 7, Allie would have been 10, and they would go to different school from Topeka, they'd go to Florida to school, and then they'd go to Colonial Heights, Virginia, where we live, and they went to school again. And everybody thought, well, you know, that's going to be really difficult on them. Well, we take them in. Allie would take Allie in and introduce her to the principal, and she'd take us down and introduce Allie to the teacher, and the teacher would introduce her to the class, and we'd stand there and talk for a little bit, and then the teacher would say, well, we'll see you tomorrow. And she says, well, I can't stay now. You know, so she was ready to stay with her new class.
Yeah.
And then Boomer comes in at 7 years old. And I already had a guy who was with Sarasota with, there was a guy named Sam. I can't remember Sam's last name, but he was a sports shoe salesman. And Sam Mahata or Mahias. And he said, can your kid play ball? And I said, oh yeah, he's a pretty good little player. He said, I got a little league team. You want to bring him on down when he comes down, bring him over. Well, Boomer became the shortstop right away. and then when that was over, about 3 weeks later, it was over. Now we're in spring training. He said, can he play basketball? Well, he was a point guard on our team here in Topeka. And I said, yeah, he's pretty decent. He said, well, we got to, over at the Jewish Community Center, he says, I got a basketball team too. Well, Boomer became the point guard. so they had a blast. Allie, you know, they got to go to the beach. They go to our trip consisted of leave Topeka, stop at one place on the way, end up in Florida, and go to Disney World the next day. Worlds of Fun the next day. And there was another place, and we hit all three of them every year, so they loved it.
Oh,
and then
great.
You know, they got to go to the beach, and it was neat. They loved traveling, and the only part about it, I mean, we didn't make very much money, and I bought a Ford from one of my neighbors before I left, and I said, how is it? He says, oh, I change oil every 3,000 miles, no problem. He said, I got no problem with this car. I bought the car, and we got down there. It blew a water pump, and the block broke. So you know the old trick. The problem was when the water pump went out, Alita was driving in down in between Charleston, South Carolina, and Greensboro, and she had the coach's the manager's wife with her. So they're out on the road with the kids by themselves in the middle of the night, and we're trying to win a ball game. So it's been great. She loved it. And, you know, I don't think she would have traded it for anything.
Oh, that's terrific. That is terrific. Did you ever get fired?
Yeah, I did. And it's an interesting situation. Once I didn't get fired, but I could have, if I'd have really raised a stink. I'm managing, in a rookie ball in, Kingsport, Tennessee. And my boss had been in scouting for years, never been in development, the development part of things. Mm-hmm. So he's, you know, from the start of the year, he's talking about this big, strong kid named Stratton from California that can hit the ball 500 feet. And so, you know, I'm saying, okay, that's great. And then I had a kid from Washburn Rural. I had our scout with the Mets come in and look at him, Brandon Copeland. And he was about 6'2" and could run, could throw, could hit with power. He's what we call a five-tool player. So we signed him. Then there's a kid out of Kansas City that I loved him because he was one of those guys that, you know, you say you need somebody to steal third base with nobody out or one out to get that winning run over there. This is a player that could get the job done. And he hit 300 the year before. I was a hitting instructor that year. And so the next year I go back, I'm the manager. So they wanted to release him. And I'm going, I don't release this guy. This guy's a player. He can play five positions and he hits and he's got a great base runner. He can steal bases, blah, blah, blah. So anyway, he went with me. So now we're playing, and our team is playing great. It was one of the, probably the, as far as the camaraderie and the togetherness. It was one of the best teams I've ever been associated with. And Stratton is hitting fourth. And Mo Bruce was the guy's name from Kansas City. Mo Bruce, I gave him the steal sign. He's on second base. Stratton's up, one out. He steals third base. Stratton now, instead of having to get a base hit to score him, now all he's got to do is just hit the ball and score him, and Bruce will score. So now 5 days, we win 4 out of 5. My boss comes in, closes the door, sits down, and usually they will take you out to lunch and talk about your team and each guy and, you know, what about this guy? How's his makeup? Do you think he'll ever do this? Because we had to project every player that we saw. We had to project in 4 years, where are they going to be? They're going to be in the big leagues, double A, triple A. They're going to be released, you know, whatever. So he comes in, he sits down, closes the door, and he says, I don't like the way you manage. Yeah, that's what I did. I kind of went back and I'm going, we just won 4 out of 5. I think my team is really close knit. The chemistry's great. We're playing great. I don't have great athletes. I've got a couple of guys that should go to the big leagues. And he says, this is it, Joe. Now, you see how you would take this if your AD came to you and said, I don't like the way you manage. You're too unpredictable. Yeah, that's what I did. I just grinned.
Oh,
I mean,
boy.
I didn't grin wide. I'm going, you don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
If you say I'm too unpredictable, it's exactly what I want to be.
Yeah.
And I said, yeah. Do you mean, you know, I started to get a little bit under, you know, it's under my skin. I'm going, so do you want me to, instead of giving the bunt sign or the hit and run sign or the steal sign, do you want me just to yell at the other manager, we're going to steal on this pitch. We're bunting. You can play your guys in. I mean, that's predictability for me. No. So anyway, I didn't get fired, but the next year I asked to go back and manage again because I enjoyed it. And my boss then, who was a different guy, the other guy was gone.
Hmm.
He said, I can't give you a managing job because Jack turned in a bad report on your managing.
Oh, geez.
Now, to top it off, I've got Copeland and Bruce, the two guys I talked about. They're both hitting 330. And guess where they went? To the next manager up, which is at the same level I'm at, to help him win the pennant, who the guy that was my boss was very good friends with the manager of that team. And Mo Bruce scored the winning run because he struck out on a ball in the dirt and ran to first base and beat the throw, and the guy from third scored, and that won the game for him. So anyway, I did get fired. I got fired, White Sox. I had the 2 years in Birmingham. And then they asked me, said, you know, we want you to go to Vancouver, which is Triple A. We want you to go to Vancouver and manage the Triple A team. Get you ready for the big leagues. And, of course, not being very smart, I didn't want to be in AAA. You're on an airplane every few days, and you're flying, and you're up at 5 o'clock. And I'm not a morning person. So, plus my main concern was I wanted to stay close to the family. The family could, you know, be around that way and fairly close. So, I said I'd really like to get back and be an instructor. I said, you know, I love managing, but if I need to go to AAA, I'd like to be an instructor. And they went, oh, adios, muchacho. Yeah. So that was, yeah. So that, you know, that's just the way it is.
Well, that brings up, there was something in my book that I talk about. I covered this with every recruit I had, and I covered it with every player, and We always began the year talking about this, and we tried to implement this as kind of a way of life, but I called it my 3F model of success. It was
right:
faith, family, fitness, in that order. And it sounds like you kind of followed that same plan, and especially in this case where you put family in front of others. And
right.
Any regrets on that?
Well, I mean, between you and me and the people that are watching, I felt that I was to a point in my career after Double A that I could actually go to the big leagues and manage and surround myself with. I had a great pitching coach, Rick Peterson, who every pitcher on my team got better. Now, they maybe all didn't show tremendous strides, but you know, it's like when you got 10 basketball players and you got guys coming in new and guys that have been there, but still you see improvement and they get a little bit better and a little better. Well, that's what happened with our team. We won the championship the first year. We got in the playoffs the second year. So, you know, I'm seeing improvement, but it was coming a lot of it from Rick Peterson's ability to deal with the pitchers. Mm-hmm. He had a master's degree in psychology.
No.
So that didn't hurt me. To have him. And then I had Ron Jackson, who was the hitting instructor for the Boston Red Sox for several years. He was my hitting guy. And I had Tommy Thompson at first base, who was an old catcher. And he and I had that a little relationship where he looked over at me, and if I gave him a little, you know, sign of some, just a little subtle deal, he knew what I meant. And he would implement it. Like one time, I don't know why I even did this, but I had a man on third, had two outs, and my guy had a 3-1 count on him. So I looked over at Tommy, and I just put my fingers close to my chest, and I went like, four balls. I mouthed it out. I said, four balls. He walks. Keep him running. Run. He said, run? He said, run. I could see him, his mouth. I said, yeah. I said, tell him. Walk up the line, tell him to run. We never worked on this play. Guy walks, he's running to first base. Tommy comes up and just told him, keep going, go to second base. He kept going. The pitcher turned, threw the ball in center field, and we got a run. So it was a play. I guarantee you, in the big leagues, it would work if you had never done it before and you'd practice it. But if you did it in the game, you get the right kind of pitcher, you know, that gets out there, the big old lanky, gawky guys that aren't used to turning and firing the ball like that, that, you know, and then if your runner, if you've worked on it, you tell your runner, you run and draw a throw. You tell the guy at third, you start walking down the line when you see the guy around first base and start moving toward home. And if the guy spins away from you and shows his back, take off. Yeah. And then even if they catch it at second, you're not going to get them at home. So yeah. Anyway, that's what happened.
That's great. Hey, we're going to take another short break. And when we come back, I want to do two things. One, I want to give you an opportunity to talk about a thing or two about the book that I wrote and maybe some of the things that kind of stood out to you. And then the other thing I want to talk about is you're an author yourself. And I know you've written some children's books and you wrote a novel recently that I read that I thought was just terrific. I just really, really enjoyed it. So I want to get into those topics when we come back.
Okay.
All right. Let's take a short break.